Hello and welcome back to the Missing Manual podcast. Zach and Connor here, and we're excited to be back to continue our voyage of exploration through the Dead Space franchise. Today we'll be looking to provide a general synopsis for the main campaign of Dead Space 2, as well as discussing the Severed expansion campaign and the links and changes that were made in comparison to the first game. On that note, we should remind you that if you haven't listened to our first episode of the Dead Space series, we'd highly recommend that you do so due to the callbacks and the continued discussions that are going to be taking place here today. So, let's get the show on the road and get right into it.
Hello, hello, hello. Greetings, one and all, and welcome back to the Missing Manual podcast. Zach and Connor here, and today we are going to be talking about Dead Space 2. I personally love Dead Space 2. I think it's a fantastic game. It innovates and improves on most aspects from the original game, in my opinion, including Zero-G, which I think was just the way they did it in 2 was the way to go for the rest of the franchise.
Yeah, couldn't have said it better myself, to be honest. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dead Space 2 really is the... It's exactly the faithful continuation of the series that we wanted as fans, right?
Pretty much, yeah. There's not much wrong you can say about Dead Space 2 at all, with the exception of, and I'm gonna address it here because I don't think we need to talk about it later on, the competitive multiplayer mode that got put in the game.
Yeah,
it has a competitive multiplayer mode, which back in the day when this game came out, that was all the rage. Like games like this would shoehorn and kind of throw in these kind of multiplayer modes. The TLDR is, it's not really good. It's not great, to be honest. It's kind of fun. I will admit it was kind of fun to play, obviously, when it was alive and kicking. But as you can expect, it died very quickly. The rest of Dead Space 2 is completely fine. I think it's a fantastic game, and I don't think that actually impacts on it at all. But it is a little bit pants.
Yeah, I completely agree with that, to be honest. Yeah. Playing it back in the day was really good with friends. Like, it was really fun, kind of 4v4, objective-based multiplayer experience. Yeah, mm-hmm. Very, very run-of-the-mill, like you said. It's very... Yeah. Dime a dozen multiplayer, but for what it was, it was fun.
And you got to play as the Necromorphs, which is kind of cool because you hadn't been able to play as Necromorphs in anything before. So, just for that, it was kind of cool. But ultimately, yeah, it's a bit of a throwaway game mode. It's not really important, and you can't really play it nowadays anyway because there's no servers for it. So it doesn't really exist anymore per se, unless some mad lads out there are going to bring it back. I don't know. You never know. To be fair, the community are crazy. They brought back things before, you know, that are long since dead. So who knows? Maybe they will bring it back. I don't think they will, but who knows?
We've seen it before, for sure.
100%.
You know, and the thing is, like, with certain games, you can kind of tell that the main game suffered because of the existence of the multiplayer.
Exactly, yeah.
But with this, I don't think that's the case. Like, I never. Again, like you've said, I can't really think of anything that's really missing from Dead Space 2 that could have been made up for by not having the kind of the quote unquote man hours put into the multiplayer, right?
Yeah, I got to admit, you've got it bang on there. To be fair, it's not there's not really anything that's kind of missing from it. The story is still really good and punchy. Like we said, there's many improvements to the gameplay. You know, zero G wise, right? Because the zero G system in the first game is very hit and miss. But in this one, it's actually a lot more freeform. Isaac has the ability to actually kind of move around almost freely, which is really good. Something I'm glad they're going to do with the remake, obviously. Which, exciting, if you're listening to this episode, the remake is probably out now. So get it and play it and enjoy it.
Definitely. And I think what's mad about Dead Space 2 in particular is the fact that while it actually retained similar critical success to the first game, it was actually considered a financial letdown by EA. They didn't have the returns that they were expecting from the game, and which I think is mad, really, because they even catered to the additional audience of those competitive multiplayers. So
I guess it was the feeling that it was kind of just thrown in, right? Or they had bigger plans for it, but obviously didn't. You know, they didn't push it further, right?
It's one of those things where, like, game companies, they really do have to be on the vein of these things, and all too often, it is a case of, like, so it could be something as easy as just chucking a multiplayer kind of into the game. It can dilute from the original product and the content.
True.
Like we said, not so much of the case here, but they kind of were treading a bit of a fine line here because it's very different to what you expect from the Dead Space series. Obviously, with it being just a single player game in its first iteration. The introduction of multiplayer was a bit of a ballsy move, and we've likened this, haven't we, to BioShock 2 as well. Same deal there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%, yeah. It was another game that I actually liked the multiplayer mode. It was kind of fun to play. But it was another one that, once again, was kind of just thrown in. Although that one did have a really cool feature where you kind of had your character, your splicer, and as you got up more levels, your splicer got progressively more kind of fucked up, which is kind of cool.
That's fucked up.
Yeah, that's fucked up. So every character visually changed as they kind of leveled up, which I thought was really cool, as they became more like splicers, actual splicers, rather than just normal people, which is what they start off with. So
that's quite good.
Yeah, the Bioshock 2 one was actually kind of nifty, you know. That's another one that I kind of enjoyed back in the day. But once again, it was put in because at the time there was, you know, a lot of sentiment in the industry of kind of single-player games sort of on the way out, really. And most games had to include like some kind of multiplayer mode, really, to kind of, you know, be in an advantageous position, which obviously nowadays, right, we know is complete bullshit, because a lot of single-player only games obviously do fantastically well, you know, which is amazing. Super good. That's the case as well, because it would be super sad, you know, if it had gone the other way back in those days and we had gone to like a single player-less existence, you know.
Oh yeah, definitely. You know, and we had our kind of renaissance with single player games, and that's I'm glad that it's revived that side of things.
Same.
So yeah, but with Dead Space 2, obviously we've mentioned that there are definitely things that have been improved from the first one. Mm-hmm. I would say Dead Space 2 overall is notably more action packed than the first one.
Oh yeah, there's a lot more stuff going on, isn't there? A lot more explosions, a lot more action, a lot more creepiness, a lot more horror as well. The game doesn't place punches in the horror department.
This was in the time of like QuickTime event games as well. We saw that quite a lot, it kind of eking its way into the survival horror games and series that we played a lot of the time. So there were it's kind of segments of the game where you'd have to mash the A button to survive a segment of the game and bits and pieces like that. Again, very part and parcel for games of the time. I don't think it detracts too much from the game, but it's definitely it's a difference maker. And it gives it that more kind of like adrenaline fueled action feel, as opposed to the kind of atmospheric, scary kind of vibe that you get from the first one. Mm. However, I do feel that with Dead Space 2, because it's a continuation of an already developed character, there is a little bit more of an emotional investment there.
Mm, and I think that also comes from the fact that this game, obviously, they double down. And they actually give Isaac a voice, which is really good. So you hear Isaac's voice quite a lot in this game, and he actually talks and narrates the situation. So no longer is he relegated to being the silent observer. He's actually a character that is alive, you know, and living and reacting to things that happen in the universe, which is really good. And that's not saying the first Isaac you see in, obviously, in Dead Space 1 is particularly bad at all. They actually did quite a good job of making that character engrossive while still, you know, not having any dialogue for him, which was kind of cool. But obviously it gets a lot easier in this game, and obviously the third game as well, in that they actually give Isaac a bit of a voice, so you can hear him react to things.
And it's no secret we're big fans of Gunnar Wright. Like,
yeah, he does a great job. Yeah,
we've loved all of the promotional stuff that he's been a part of in the obviously with this remake that's coming up. So I really like him. I think he gives that character such credence, and he gives him such personality.
Yeah, he's a big fan as well. He's a big fan of the character, which is nice to see. He quite likes Isaac as a character. He gets very involved in the role. And that's cool, because obviously the Dead Space series is quite old, right? You know, the second one obviously released in 2011. What, the first one was like 2008, wasn't it? I think we said last time.
That's right. Yeah. So it's been around for a long
old time, right? And then Dead Space 3 obviously came out in 2013. And, you know, for the longest time, that was the last entry in the series. So it's very, I think, nice to see that him as an actor, he still likes the character of Isaac and, you know, still wants to lend his voice to that character as well.
And I like the fact that the studio is actually willing to bring him back as well, because, I mean, we've seen it with lots of games where it's just a lot of the time it's easier to maybe hire a voice actor that maybe isn't as well established, because it's on the cheaper side, or they want to take things in a new creative direction. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of good that they brought him back, because it also stays very, very faithful to the source material. Mm-hmm. You know, this is essentially a reboot for want of a better description of it. But instead of just completely overhauling everything, they've kept so like as much of the bare of the bones of the original product as they can, in order to, you know, to create this new game. So
for sure, before we dive into this new game, the second game, I would want to touch on just some extra bits of media out there for Dead Space 2, because just like Dead Space 1, there was a lot of extra media that was created in anticipation for this game coming out. So first up, there is a book called Dead Space Martyr that exists, which is kind of interesting. Actually like a book rather than a graphic novel. This book is actually set in the timeline. It's set 2 centuries before the main events of the very first game. And it actually serves as an expansion to Unitology, the entire religion, basically.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool. So the entire book, you know, explains a lot about the formation of the Unitology and all that kind of stuff. And it's really good because it sort of explains a lot of stuff that the first game sort of hinted towards, because obviously Unitology, we're going to get into it when we discuss the storyline Dead Space 2, very important in the second game. There's a lot of extra things that come from the church, and the church's involvement becomes a lot more deeper, noticeably deeper, should we say, compared to the first game. So you had Martyr, which was an actual book. You had another anime film, kind of like the first one, this one called Aftermath. Have you ever seen that one, Zach?
I have, yeah.
You've seen Aftermath as well, yeah. Aftermath was a weird one.
Yeah.
Because it was done differently to the first game, which had a coherent style throughout the entire game. This one actually followed a similar path that another anime that Visceral Games had made for their Dante's Inferno game, which was being made along the same time as Dead Space 2.
Yeah.
And that also had an anime film, and that had an interesting style where every circle of hell was done by a different director.
Yeah.
And a different artist as well. So a different art style permeated each one. And this actually does the exact same thing, but instead of obviously Circles of Hell, it does it based on people's recollections of things happening.
That's
so
right,
each,
yeah.
Each person's recollection is done by a different director and done in a different art style, which is kind of interesting.
And it's great. It's really good because people do tend to see the world from a slightly different perspective. So mm-hmm.
It
literally gives you a different perspective and a different way of seeing the world every mm-hmm. time you change character. It's very, very clever way of doing it, I think.
Mm. It's really good. And this one, actually, I think more than the first one, I would say is not very important, but if you watch it, it will definitely help because it literally takes place not long after the end of the first game, and it sets up and actually explains why Isaac is in the place that he finds himself in at the start of the second game. So it actually does do a good job of tying the games together nicely.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah, considering that we have basically a time window of 3 years in between the Aegis 7 and USG Ishimura outbreak and the events that take place in Dead Space 2, it's really good to fill in those gaps. Very, very good. And it explains an awful lot of what you see moving forward, really, doesn't it? Yeah,
100%. Yeah, it is a lot. I think it's a lot more. I wouldn't say it's important because the other one's quite important as well. But yeah, I think it fills a very, very niche but good role in the series if you want to know a bit more context, because the start of Dead Space 2 can be a little bit muddy and a little bit confusing, especially if you came literally from playing the second game and you've had no other kind of, you know, I guess, dive into the story or anything like that. Also, if you weren't too diligent with the old logs as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. I feel like it's not too bad. Like you get in a way a bit of a brief kind of synopsis of the first one as you start the campaign for the second one, kind of in the form of like Isaac recounting what's happened to a psychiatric nurse. Yeah. So, kind of we've kind of involuntary kind of sidestepped into explaining the synopsis here and the main plot of the game, but we have to start somewhere, right?
Exactly. So,
So Isaac is a patient in a psychiatric ward. The events of the previous game have obviously taken their toll, right? And his interaction with the marker as well has definitely affected his mental state. So they've got him in a straitjacket, and they're kind of asking him what happened, you know, what actually transpired there. So quite quickly you're kind of like, well, this is pretty bad. Like how did we get to this point? Isaac was found floating around in space after the events of the Ishimura, and he was seized by Earthgub forces, to which he was then taken to a station known as the Sprawl by the inhabitants. And it is a station, like a space station, built into a shard from Titan, which is it Saturn's moon. Saturn's moon, yes. So it's basically a whole sprawling metropolis built on a meteor, basically. We've seen that many times.
Yeah, it sort of reminds me of almost like a smaller Warhammer Hive City-esque type look.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
It almost looks like a 40k Hive City almost kind of vibe, but a little bit smaller, obviously not as big or like planet size. But the actual Sprawl itself, I think, is really cool. Like really, it's a really cool design.
It's got a bit of really cool. almost a little bit like Mass Effect 2 when you go to like Omega or the Marvel Cinematic Universe with Nowhere, right? The city that's built into the skull of one of the galactic ancients or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So it's got that kind of feel to it.
It's got that vibe for it for sure, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's sort of hostile, but also civilized as well.
Mm.
He is aboard this station and he remembers very little. So you start where Isaac as a character does as well. So I think that's quite good. You have about as much information as he does. You remember the first game, so does he. And you're kind of piecing things together, at least for the first act of the game. Trying to get your bearings.
The first act of the game definitely plays into the kind of psychological damage that Isaac encountered during the first game. You know, so it heavily plays off his kind of deteriorating mental state, his losing his grip on reality. Obviously, you know, the fact that his girlfriend, obviously the big reveal at the end of the first game that she's been dead the entire time, and Isaac and her ghost and or spirit and or something is communicating and speaking to Isaac.
With her light bulb eyes and
with light bulb eyes, which make a return in this one. It's fucking horrific. But a lot of those themes are played on very heavily in the start of the game. Nursery rhymes as well. Big thing for nursery rhymes in this game too. There's lots of sequences where nursery rhymes play, and they also lent quite heavily on that into the branding as well, which I think was really cool, really nice.
Yeah, it's a nice throwback to the first one and the marketing for that, right?
So yeah, it is, yeah.
Yeah, it's very, very good. And again, like we said, very faithful to the source material. Looking to kind of continue those themes on as you kind of progress through. So Isaac is explaining to this psychiatric nurse kind of like, or rather the nurse is asking him a lot of questions, and Isaac is responding like, yes, it was the USG Ishimura. The nurse kind of asks, what did you find? And that's at the point when, like, the ghost of Nicole steps onto the table, and the mouth opens up and the light bulb kind of flicks on, and without her mouth moving, you can hear her saying, "Make us whole." So very, very scary. She like kind of crawls onto the table like a grudge girl.
It's pretty horrific. Yeah, I'm not gonna lie. It's pretty it's pretty creepy, pretty scary when you see.
Yeah. So he's kind of traumatized by that. He kind of blacks out, and then he wakes up in a padded cell. The door's wide open as you come to, and you can see things have gone to shit out there. Now there's this guy trying basically to unfasten you from your cell so you can escape with him. I can't remember his name. What was his name again?
That's a really good question, my man.
Franco. It was Franco.
Yes, that's the one.
There we go. Right. So Franco, as a little bit of a side note as well, he was the protagonist of a little side hustle game called Ignition as well, which was quite an interesting one. I've never played Ignition myself.
It was a very small, almost mobile-esque game on the PlayStation Network and games for like Xbox Live Arcade type thing. When that was a system that existed, and it was a small, almost kind of Telltale-esque game, really, like a 2D comic kind of game. But it is set before Dead Space 2, and like I said, yes, the character you play in that game is the character that meets Isaac at the start of this game, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, so he's trying to break, basically spring Isaac from his cell, but before he can actually help Isaac out of his straitjacket, lo and behold, a necromorph infector pops up, stabs him right in the head, and you get this wonderful sequence where you see up close and personal the transformation of human into necromorph, and it's really grotesque, but it's very, very cool imagery.
It's kind of sad. Like, obviously, Dead Space Ignition, right, isn't a crazy good game. It's also very puzzle heavy, so if you don't like puzzle games, it's not the one for you. But it is kind of... It's kind of funny that obviously if you played that game, you would have spent the entire time playing as that character. And here in Dead Space 2, he is killed literally in the first 5 seconds.
In moments. Yeah. He's on screen for about 15 seconds before he becomes a necromorph.
And he gets horrifically fucked up as well. Like, it's not even a little bit. Like, he gets fucking destroyed.
Yeah. He literally, the infector jabs the tendril right into his forehead. And from that point then, you see him die and come back to life in basically seconds. In the meantime, then you see the kind of scythe-like appendages start to sprout out of his back, and it's this bit where he kind of like his neck kind of distends a little bit, and you see the skin stretch and snap off, and then it kind of peels away, and you see all like the little tentacles and stuff coming out of his face. It's fucking awful. Like,
it's pretty horrific. Yeah, watch. It's pretty horrific.
But again, very cool because as far as we've seen in the franchise so far, we've never seen anything like that up close.
No.
So we've seen the infectors obviously do the thing and infect corpses, but you don't see it in that much detail. So I thought that was a really cool moment straight off the bat. So Isaac manages, he's an absolute Chad. He headbutts this thing to get it off of him, and then he makes his escape through the ward in a straitjacket. So I mean, he's completely defenseless. All you can do is run at that point. And you know, things have gone bad. All the patients have turned into necromorphs. The doctors are all insane and they've lost their minds.
The shit has hit the fan again.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, unequivocally hit the fan. So he is he's contacted by a woman named Dana. Now, she was the sister of Franco, and she believes that she can help Isaac not only escape the ward and escape the station, but she claims that he has a kind of a form of dementia that is horrendous in severity, and it will kill him eventually. So she kind of claims that she's got the cure. She'll help him get to her so she and he can escape the station together.
She says, obviously, you know, Isaac is not well, he's ill, and that's partly due to his time with the marker in the first game as well, and the effects that's on him.
Yeah, so he's kind of got your objective at that point. In the interim, you bump into the psychiatric nurse that was asking you the questions, and he is, as we've said, very, very unhinged. He cuts Isaac out of the straitjacket, albeit it makes it look like he gets stabbed, but it's not. He's just cutting him out of the straitjacket, and he graces Isaac with a flashlight and a health pack, which is your first starting gear, which is very nice. And you make your way through several rooms of the hospital, eventually finding yourself a plasma cutter, so you're equipped and ready to go to face the necromorphs.
It's that old times over again.
Oh yeah, exactly. You've got your stasis module, your kinesis, and I think the kinesis is definitely improved in this one as well. Kinesis definitely factors in an awful lot more, especially in the early parts of the game, using it as a weapon, because in this game as well, they introduced the ability to take the blades off of slain necromorphs to use as projectiles. So you can fire the spikes of the necromorphs into other necromorphs and use those as weapons, which was quite a cool little addition to the game.
Very cool.
So while he's trying to make his way to the marker that Dana has given him, he also bumps into another patient called Nolan Stross. Now, this guy is also very interesting. He is in the same position as Isaac. He is affected by the marker signals, and the kind of the memories are coming back to him. But he remembers just a little bit more than Isaac does at this point. So Isaac kind of needs him. He needs to use him as a bit of a crutch to help him remember, basically, what happened, what he needs to do. So these two kind of become reluctant allies, if you will, as Isaac tries to track Nolan Stross down while he's on his way to Dana. Dana warns him against this and says Nolan Stross is a psychopath. He's killed his wife and child. He's mentally deranged. He is not safe to be around. Stay away from him at all costs.
Also, big throwback again, real quick. Nolan Stross, he's a character who appears in the second anime film as well.
Yeah, exactly. So
you can get more of his backstory shown in that film.
Yeah, it's very good, and he's actually not the only one that's kind of poignant to the story that pops up from the other media as well. And we'll discuss that quite a bit later on, because we've got a lot to get through here first. So Dana reveals that she needs Isaac to get there. Stay away from Nolan Stross at all costs.
Oh yes.
So his kind of path. You get your suit by that point, and you have access to a bunch of different weapons. You're making your way to her position as quickly as possible, and it takes you through a Unitologist church.
It's a very cool scene, actually. I will admit, it's a really, really cool scene in the game.
The scenery is fantastic for that. It is really good.
The set dressing and the entire area for the Unitology church is really well done. It's very, very lovely, and it breaks up the it breaks up the flow and the art direction quite well, which up till now has been your kind of normal sci-fi-esque kind of arrangement. But this is a really cool kind of almost melding between like a traditional Gothic church with a sci-fi aesthetic.
Yeah, it's very, very pretty to look at. And what you've seen so far in the game is a change of pace from the USG Ishimura, obviously, with the ship. It was very kind of like heavy industrial kind of blocky feel to it, whereas this has that kind of, like you've said, the kind of the sci-fi hab block feel to it. It's as much like a city as they can make it on a giant ball of rock, right? So this church again is another change of scenery, it's very, very cool, very dark scene. There's the stained glass windows with the kind of the imagery of the church on it, which I think is a really nice look.
The entire church section is great. Like a lot of the architecture as well is like you said, it's very heavily inspired by the marker as well. So like they've got lots of columns that twist, like the marker twists. The marker obviously is like the imagery is seen throughout the entire level as well. Like I said, you've got the big stained glass window. All that kind of stuff is really nicely done.
Yeah, as if the visions weren't bad enough for Isaac. Obviously, he's just seeing these markers everywhere. It's a constant reminder of what he's been through. So he's just being haunted, in every turn, basically, with the imagery, with the monsters he's fighting. It just seems like this guy can't get a break. You know, we're saying with the dangling of the carrot in the first episode. Like another thing they continue with this one. It's just a constant out of one pan. Or out of one fire and into the next, right?
Hey, that is the way Isaac rolls.
So he finally makes his way to Dana's position, and sadly, it's a double cross. I don't know what it is.
Who saw this coming again?
I don't know what it is with Isaac. He has all of the luck with the women, doesn't he, right?
It happened in the first game, happens in this game.
Yeah, so you can understand why, eventually he's once bitten, twice shy, Isaac. Just learn from your mistakes, damn it.
He does. I mean, obviously by the third game, right, we won't go into it here because we're going to do a whole episode on that. But by the third game, right, Isaac is obviously incredibly fucking jaded. to the world everything around him, right? That man is RPG character sheet. Yeah, he's got like legendary jaded. Nothing. He doesn't give a shit anymore.
Yeah, death is actually a sweet release for him at this point.
It would be welcome. Yeah,
totally. Yeah, if it wasn't necromorphs and the hideous ways that they can kill.
I mean, if you found yourself in the necromorph apocalypse as kind of a end of the world situation, it's definitely not one of the good ones to find yourself in.
No.
It's either just ahead or just behind 28 Days Later zombies.
Yeah, and necromorphs can run too. So
yeah, exactly. So it's pretty fucked up.
Yeah,
it's probably worse, to be fair, than 28 Days Later.
At least the 28 Days Later zombies, at least they would starve eventually. The necromorphs can just suspend themselves, don't they, right?
Yeah. So, and also anyone can really turn. Yeah, it's not great. It's not great. It's definitely above 28 Days Later.
Yeah, like even dying isn't an escape from it because the body just, it's just reshaped in the image of whatever the necromorph marker signal chooses to make you into, right? So it's not good. Not good.
No.
You see any unitologist kind of statues around, just smash them fuckers. Just break them now. Just get them out of the way. He's been betrayed by Dana. She wants to use Isaac's knowledge of the markers. And all of the secrets that are trapped away inside his little head, and steal them away to the Unitologist Church so they can make markers everywhere and spread the glorious convergence. So this is our first kind of real, even though we kind of had a little bit of it in the first one, this is really where we start to see the Unitologists become the main antagonist of the storyline.
Yeah, this is what we're saying. This is why I think the Martyr book is quite a good one to dive into, because it provides a lot of background, a lot of interesting details with Unitologists, but there's also quite a lot of good stuff in the church section as well that you can find and read about, which gives you a really good grounding in the religion and stuff like that. And obviously she's already kind of she's sort of guilting Isaac into this as well at first, because she states that, the reason this is happening on the sprawl is because there's a marker here, and shock horror, Isaac was the one that made that marker.
Yes. Yeah. So, Isaac and Stross, funnily enough, they both have the marker has imprinted its signal within their brains.
So almost like blueprints, right?
Yeah.
Cerebral blueprints.
And that's what's causing the dementia for them both. So she basically explains to Isaac that the director of the Titan station, he's a guy called Tideman, has basically been injecting him with memory suppressants in order to keep the signal from destroying his mind, because they wanted to keep him intact so they could build their own marker. So there is actually a brand new marker built aboard the Titan station, which is how this has all transpired, why there's another outbreak. Because as soon as a marker is active and the signal's getting sent out, anybody that's dead doesn't stay dead. They come back. So she wants to put him into stasis and steal him away, again, to spread that glorious convergence. Before she has the chance to do so, the government sector soldiers, they manage to find Dana and Isaac in their gunship, in their floaty space gunship, and they decompress the room and blow the windows out.
They realize the time for negotiations has failed, and they open fire on the church, bro.
Yeah, so
they light up. They light up Dana and her associates.
No longer sovereign ground, right? They've shit all over that now. So so Dana and her cronies are slain, sucked out into the vacuum of space filled with bullet holes. Isaac is able to escape. This kind of leads us on then. So Isaac is kind of floating in the void again now, in terms of the story, not actually floating in the void. But he now doesn't really have an objective again. That one little shred of hope that he had to escape the station has been stolen away from him. And Stross is able to get back in contact with him again via the rig radio. Isaac has just gotten over a betrayal, and now he has to kind of reluctantly trust Stross, because Stross is kind of feeding him a line of like, with the knowledge that we have in our minds, we can destroy the marker, we can stop this from happening again anywhere. So,
and that's really kind of where it's got going from this point, right? He's obviously been told that, you know, shouldn't trust Stross. Stross is a bad person, but obviously, you know, she was also a bad person, right? So,
yeah, the one the person
apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
Yeah, the one person that told him not to trust Stross was a traitor. So, Isaac is in limbo on who he can trust right now. So,
He hasn't got many options. So, the best option is destruction.
Yeah, that's it. He can lay down and die and accept his fate, or he can try and undo some of the wrongs that he directly or indirectly has caused. So he works his way through the kind of like the shopping districts of the sprawl. And this is where he bumps into another survivor called Ellie Langford. Now, she is another CEC kind of employee, a little bit like Isaac, but she's more of like an officer and like a... Like a heavy load kind of like a vehicle like a pilot basically, whereas Isaac is more of an engineer. So Ellie, very much in the same way that Isaac is at this point, very untrusting of people, and she kind of explains to him that over the course of the morning she had a crew of like 30 people, and she had to dismember them all to get away and survive. So she's seen some shit by this point, and. Mm-hmm. You know, she's kind of like doing a bit of a last stand thing behind this, what would you call it? A shutter, isn't it?
It's like shuttered.
Isaac is like, I don't really trust anybody, but we're probably going to stand a better chance if we stick together. Ellie's like, no chance. I'm going to open up this elevator for you, and then I'm going to leave. That. Don't follow me. Yeah. She's like, I'm going to leave. Don't follow me. I don't trust you at all. You're just going to turn into one of those things and kill me. So, they kind of split up for the meantime. And Isaac continues his solo path of destruction through the station. At which point, Ellie kind of calls him a little bit later on. And she's found Nolan Stross. And she's basically like, this guy says he knows you. Give me a reason not to shoot him.
Yeah, she sort of is going to try and kill him, basically. Which is a little bit sad for our poor Nolan. And Isaac essentially has convinced her to keep him alive, basically.
Yeah.
And create this kind of strange ragtag band of kind of dropouts.
Yeah. They are kind of like the irregulars, aren't they?
Because Stross is also obviously suffering like Isaac is, but Stross is way further gone. Like, he is straight up crazy.
Oh, yeah. He's because he started to remember before Isaac did, the severe side effects of the dementia have also started to kick in as well. Isaac has to kind of make his way to them in the CEC kind of like hub.
The government sector, yeah.
The government sector is it comes a little bit later, but first of all, they have to get to the CEC so they can actually board the tram to get over to the government sector. So on his way, he goes through the school. Now, I thought you'd want to mention the school.
Yeah, the nursery. It's fucking so creepy.
yeah, the nursery is probably terrifying.
The creepiest area, I think, in Dead Space 2 by far. This is like sort of the level. What kind of level is it? It's sort of like the Benevento house from Village, right? It's proper creepy section of the game. The atmosphere is very dark, very sullen, and it's meant to be, you know, this very fun, joyous area, right? Because it's like the nursery where the kids are, and there's all lots of colors and pictures and all that kind of nice stuff. And sadly, it's here you meet an horrific, absolute horrific, creepy Dead Space necromorph known as the Crawler, which is horrific. Honestly, this thing is damn. Oh, dude. There's a bit where, like, there's this woman. She's, like, calling for a baby to come over, and the baby crawls towards her, and she picks up this baby, and then the baby just explodes, and she just gets splattered across the wall. It's horrific to see. But the crawlers are basically small babies that have become necromorphs, but they still maintain sort of a lot of their human features, which is really disturbing. And obviously, there's not many games that show this, show these kind of dead-looking children like this, or as visceral as this. Ironically, Visceral Games did this for Dante's Inferno as well, with the unbaptized baby enemy, which caused a lot of controversy in America. This one also caused controversy in America. It ended up them getting a bit of a fight with the Nanny Association of America, the International Nanny League, which apparently is a thing in America. I didn't realize this was a thing, but it is. And they were protesting the game, basically claiming that it tarnished the names of nannies everywhere because Visceral had tied an achievement to these necromorphs called Bad Nanny. Which is kind of funny.
So you had to, I believe you had to defeat 30 of the of the little exploders without actually blowing them up. So you had to go for headshots, basically, which is like the opposite of what you would do with most necromorphs. Because they're not the only child necromorph enemies.
No.
They're also the packs as well. So the pack are they're kind of like more like older children, but they have like talon like hands, and they're very weak.
They're more like younger kids rather than actually like infants, whereas the crawlers are like full-on infants, and then
they're like toddlers, basically.
And you've got the others as well, with the ones that kind of crawl on the walls.
Those are lurkers.
Yeah, they're kind of like kid-like as well, but maybe like a toddler, perhaps.
Yeah, and those ones are actually a returning enemy from the first one, because how they're on board in the USG Ishimura in the first one is because there are like basically breeding tanks. So the kind of the crew, like fertilized eggs and stuff, like they're cryogenically frozen, and then the next generation of like the colonists and whatnot, they are kind of kept in storage until they're needed, basically. So it's quite interesting, a little bit of an interesting fun fact there, as fun as that can be. So makes his way through there. He gets to the CEC, where they try and board the tram, but unfortunately the power is out, so Tideman has basically shut everything down, so there's no way of getting across the government sector until they restore the solar array. Now this is a really cool section. I really like the solar array section of the game, because there's a lot of external parts of it where you're floating around in the void outside, kind of completing engineering tasks and trying to deal with the kind of like the necromorph growths on the outside of the station as well. So that's quite a cool moment. And so you're trying to repair the solar array, you get that sorted, and then Stross and Ellie are able to board the tram, and they're trying to make their way over to the government sector. You kind of shoot down to get there as quick as you can. But Tideman then turns the solar array on the track, and he severs the link between the government sector and the rest of the station. So the government sector is basically cut off, and it starts to float out into space. So he completely cuts it off from the rest of the from the rest of the station. So now, how the hell are they going to get over there? So they have got to try and figure out a way of getting over there. And they do so by kind of, they basically fire the tram off over into the Titan mines, which is kind of attached to the government sector. So they end up in this like isolated kind of mining area where, because the Titan moon had been planet cracked before, and that's one of the shards of the planet had been, that's where the Titan station was built, but it was still being mined for its resource locally. So our survivors kind of have to brave those mines, and they're horrendously infected by
necromancy. Well, yeah, so you kind of learn that the mines is sort of where the outbreak kind of first happened as well. So this is sort of like almost like ground zero. That's not the marker itself, but where the necromorph started to, you know, initially spread throughout the sprawl. So this is a pretty bad area to find yourself in.
Yeah. So it's not good. Like it's a pretty grisly scene, and there's a lot of things that a lot of parts of the scenery that you notice that battles have already taken place, and you kind of in the main campaign you're wondering, oh man, I wonder what happened here, and you do get to find that out, and again we will explain a little bit later on. I've already kind of briefly explained that there was an expansion campaign, and it kind of ties in with that, so it's quite clever, and we will explain why it's quite clever a little bit later on. Isaac and Ellie, they are trying to make their way through the mines, so they're gonna need to find some heavy mining equipment so they can break through the wall to get into the government sector. At this point, Stross has just he's off the deep end at this point.
He has gone big,
and he has he's become homicidal. So he you see in one of the rig communications that he's got a screwdriver, and he's like, Ellie, I need to make you see. You need to see it. You need to go through the steps. So he's been going on about these steps the whole time, about like step one, crawl into the dark machine. Step two, the screws go all the way, like they go tight all the way, and it's just gibberish. You don't really you have no context for it at this point.
It's so fucking creepy as well, dude. I love that shit.
Yeah, but he's like. You know, cross my heart and hope to die, stick a needle in my eye, and he drives the screwdriver into Ellie's eye. So at that point you think, oh no, she's dead, oh shit. And there's a sequence then where Stross catches up with Isaac, and there's a bit of a scuffle, and Isaac kills Stross.
It's in self-defense, but also it's like at the time Stross is obviously completely gone at this point.
Yeah, so sadly that's the end of Stross. But Ellie, luckily, is still alive, albeit one eye down.
Albeit eyeless.
So they managed to happen across this big kind of drill dozer thing that they use to crash through into the government sector. They drive a hole straight from the mines into the government sector. Quite a magnificent fashion. Sadly, though, that has also given the necromorphs a way into the government sector. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of soldiers in there waiting to eliminate Isaac and to protect Tideman. And they are quickly overwhelmed by the sheer volume of necromorphs that have followed in the wake of Isaac and Ellie's kind of war path.
Quite a lot. Also, forgive me if I'm wrong. I can't remember if this is before or after this section. I'm a little bit hazy still remembering the entire plot of the second game. But Isaac makes a little detour, doesn't he, back to the Ishimura, doesn't he?
Yes, so the Ishimura is that's part of how they get over to the how they're actually able to get over to the Titan mines.
Yes,
so yeah, you're absolutely correct. So I can't believe I forgot that part.
It's quite a big bit, as it's almost like a return to form, really.
Yeah, it's not it's not as big a bit of the game as you remember.
Not in terms of actual time, but in terms of relevance, right?
Oh, but yeah, definitely, yeah, because you could everything on the inside. You revisit a few of the kind of the notable rooms in the ship, and a lot of things are covered in plastic sheeting. And
it's sort of recovered part of the Ishimura, haven't they? And they've got it here.
Yeah, and there's black lights all over the place as well, so you can see the walls are still covered in like the bloody finger paintings and the kind of the marker insignias and things like that. So you go to the Ishimura, just backtracking a little bit, to you use the gravity tether from the ship in order to realign the government sector with the rail of the tram that was severed by the kind of the solar array. So
it's good old Ishimura gravity tether, mate. Once again, coming in clutch.
Exactly right. So yeah, so that was again, a very, very good throwback. And yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that because I would have completely forgotten it.
Yeah, well, you remember because in that bit, there's a lot more kind of intense hallucinations as well. It starts getting a bit more real in that when Isaac steps back into Nishimura for the first time again.
Yeah, it's actually one of the more quiet sections of the game as well.
It's just very unnerving to be back in its presence, especially if you played the first game right and you understand all the bits that went down there. It's very much a it's a return to not a great place.
Yeah, definitely. And it's kind of the action takes a bit of a back seat, so you can kind of relive those moments. It is very that's a very atmosphere filled section. There are obviously bits of combat on there, but it is primarily to advance the story and for you to kind of experience the fun of the hallucinations, like you said. So, that's a very, very good segment. But kind of going back to the government sector, so Isaac has made his kind of his grand entrance, as you will, with his army of necromorphs. There's this wonderful bit where kind of Isaac has just killed a few necromorphs to kind of get away and get into the inner part of the government sector, and he stumbles upon this kind of lobby and it's all kind of dark, and then all of a sudden a spotlight comes on him and there must be like 100+ lasers all kind of focused on him, and it's all of the soldiers, they've all kind of set up to ambush him, and it's just this bit of like, oh my god, that's a lot of guns. And they open fire and you've got to like duck into a room quick, otherwise you just get cut to shreds. Like it's terrible. But I like that. And then you kind of you release the blast doors then to unleash the necromorphs upon those soldiers so you can progress onwards.
While you're kind of being guided, aren't you, by Nicole again, like, well, I have a vision of Nicole, but she is not very hostile. She's more kind of passive towards you.
Yeah. So at this point, because Isaac all the way through has been like, you're a hallucination. I don't believe in you and so on and so forth. There's actually, again, a really poignant moment in the mines after he kills Stross, where he kind of has this bit where Nicole, the ghost of Nicole, will say, is kind of strangling him, and it's like he could die basically if you don't succeed the button mash sequence. But after that, she's kind of like, you know, do you know why you're haunted and stuff like that? And it's like he kind of has this moment because he's like, Nicole, because you are my everything. You know, and I let you go and I will never forgive myself for it. And then she kind of lets him go, and instead of having the light bulb eyes and the bloody visage, she's just normal Nicole again, and she's like, step four, acceptance.
There you go.
He's kind of making peace with his demons in order to have the strength to continue on to destroy the marker, right? He fights his way through the government sector and he fucks it up basically for the humans that are left. So
he does. In Tyburn's defense, he has basically kept most of the necromorphs off of the government sector and away from obviously where the mark is being kept, which is a good thing, as we're going to find out shortly. It's also before this point, isn't it, that Isaac sends Ellie off, doesn't he?
Yes. So yeah, she boards a gunship and she's like, look, we can get out of here. And he's like, I've come too far. Like I can't go.
He sort of tricks her right into going on the ship and then sends it off.
Yeah, absolutely. Which in a roundabout kind of way will save him later.
It's also like that connection as well, right? So Isaac has developed this connection with Ellie as well throughout the course of this game, and it's kind of implied that he doesn't want to, you know, Ellie to suffer the same fate Nicole did, you know.
Yeah, that's it. You know, it's kind of. You'd like to think it's an all life is precious kind of thing, but with the way Isaac is off in these guards, I can't say it's
not really. No, he doesn't obviously want Ellie to fall the same fate, you know, that Nicole did, and once again lose someone he cares about.
It's his moment of redemption, isn't it? If he can save one person, then
he makes up for Nicole's death by saving Ellie. Basically, is what he thinks he can make peace with that.
Yeah, definitely. So he's managed to get Ellie away in a gunship, and that's it. And he's on his way then to destroy the marker. Now he gets up to the kind of the experimental labs where the EarthGov scientists have been. That's where they did all their work on the marker.
Yeah,
the marker itself is in a giant chamber, and it's huge. This marker is much bigger than the one from the first one. It's you know, it's building size. It's massive. And
this is going grandiose, isn't it? Like, this is the marker itself is now kind of entering a stage known as the convergence, isn't it? Which is an event that the unitologists obviously believe very heavily in, very significant event for them in their kind of religion, right?
Yeah, the bodies of the reanimated corpses from the station, or the necromorphs, they've all kind of arrived around the marker, and the marker
converging
activated.
On the marker.
Yes, and the noise that it makes is fantastic. Mm. It's like the horns of heaven, right? It's just an awesome sound, and you've got to go and listen to it for yourself.
It's wild, yeah. The whole convergence section is crazy, really, really crazy.
Yeah. So Isaac now has to follow the steps, and he realizes this when he walks into the research kind of laboratory, and he sees the dark machine. It's like it almost looks a little bit like an MRI scanning pod, doesn't it?
Like you said, he remembers what Strauss was talking about. You know, going back to when Strauss was chatting about all of his absolute madness, he now remembers, and he now kind of sees that. Oh, Strauss is talking about this strange machine in front of the marker that Isaac now has to get inside.
Yeah, and this is probably my least favorite part of the game, and it's not because it's not a good part, because it's very good at what it does, but it's just because it really cringes me out every time.
Oh, dude, this section is pretty horrific.
So, I mean, I'll let you describe
it. Yeah, as Isaac gets into the machine and kind of the robot repeats the steps and gets more fucked up, Isaac's eyes are kind of opened up with sort of specular type things, sort of like Clockwork Orange styly, and a laser comes down, and you then have to realize that the needle in the eye section means this. You then have to guide the needle into Isaac's eye, which is really fucking hard to do first time, and will result in probably one of the most horrific death sequences, I think, that's in the game by far. And it's really hard to do. When the laser is red, that means it's not on target. When the laser is blue, it means it's on target. But obviously, the closer you get to Isaac's eye, the more the eyeball moves, and the more that then flickers between red and blue. So it's very easy to mess this up. Super easy to mess this up, in fact.
I don't know about you, but I cringe more when he gets it right.
I mean, it's not great either way, honestly. Both methods are really bad.
It's not, but at least it sounds bad, but at least when you fuck it up, it's covered in gore. But actually seeing a needle going through into someone's pupil, it's really uncomfortable. I don't like things with eyes anyway. Like I'm usually not very cringy when it comes to things like that. Like, you know, most things don't bother me, but fucking needles and then in your eye as well, that's just awful.
it's a great comment where it's like, the machine, I just need to stick this needle in your eye gently, stay put. Isaac shakes his eye. The machine, I guess I just lodge this into your cranium then.
it goes from
normal to like pretty horrific in like seconds. If you fuck it up, goes straight through Isaac's eye, all the way to the top, almost basically out the other end, and you just get this horrific look of Isaac. It's so bad. It's so horrific. It's such a graphic and intense moment. And if they do remake the second game, cannot wait to see that in HD.
Oh, crikey. You know, like I can, it's really strange how I can handle the dismemberment and the limbs and stuff like
that. It's a very uncomfortable section because it's just well animated. Yeah. Everything about it is well animated. The way Isaac's eyes move, obviously he can't blink either because they're being held open by like the scapula type things.
Yeah.
So like he can't.
It's the panic as well. You can see the eye darting around and stuff. Mm. Yeah, it is. It's a very uncomfortable section, but it's very well done, and it does exactly what it needs to do.
Oh, 100%, yeah. It's a very, very frightening section, and also a really cool side point. Again, throwing back to the other media, the Dead Space Aftermath cover, the cover for the anime film, is basically that exact image, but instead of the needle, it's the marker, and the marker's going into a big eye.
Yes, yeah, it's very good. So, with Isaac kind of unlocking his mind, this needle in the eye has unlocked his mind, and he's now able to, rather than the signal corrupting and destroying him, he now has a grasp on it. He can control it. He understands the marker symbols now. So he's been able to embrace embrace the signal. So now he has the fortitude in his mind to be able to destroy the marker once and for good. Mm-hmm. Once and for good, once and for all. So he makes his way down to the marker at its base, albeit through this great sequence where you're being chased by one of those indestructible regenerator monsters.
Very cool.
It's cool that they make a bit of a return as well. I was glad to see him back.
Yeah, a lot of the, as well as the few new necromorphs, there is a lot of returning faces as well in this one. A lot of similar necromorphs come back again, albeit a little bit different, which is kind of cool because of the, environment they kind of take from. Almost kind of like the aliens in Alien, isn't it?
Yeah.
They kind of change depending on the kind of people they infect and the areas they inhabit. Kind of cool.
It's good, actually. Yeah, there is an awful lot more variety. It's even things like you've got some new enemies like the Puker, which is a brand new addition to
that's a good one,
Dead Space 2 as well. And the Puker is a really good one, actually. That was one of my favourite ones to play in the multiplayer of all things. Actually, it's really good because you've got this. It's kind of like a snare, like long range snare spit that you can use on it to like slow opponents down, and then the close range is just to spew all over them, basically like a sitting spew. Yeah. So they're quite a cool enemy as well, actually, especially the necromorphs kind of come in two phases, don't they? There's like the normal versions of them, and then they have those like the dark brown kind of skinned ones as well, which are like ones that take they're a lot harder to kill
with the orange eyes.
They're quite hard to kill, especially in the second iteration. It's quite good. Get some of those return enemies. Now Isaac makes his way to the base of the marker, and it's at this point then that the ghost, if you will, or the vision of Nicole kind of turns up, and Isaac's like, right, so how do we do this? And he's betrayed once again.
Oh, just before we then if we're touching it, he also kills Tideman as well. Bang.
That's Tideman. Is Tideman after or before?
I think it's as he's going towards the marker, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
As he's fighting his way towards the marker, he comes across Tideman.
Tideman's got like a... He's got like a... what is it? It's like a harpoon gun, isn't it?
Yeah,
Shoots Isaac in the hand with it, and it's like, oh my God.
Yeah,
But yeah, Isaac then kind of makes his way over, wrestles control of the harpoon gun, shoots Tideman right through the bottom of the...
He gets messed
bottom
up.
Bottom of the neck, right through the top of the head. So he's dead. He's... very dead. But yeah, he's betrayed by the vision of Nicole.
Once again, Nicole's come back, baby.
Oh, no, man. But he's kind of dragged into this, basically into his mind. Mm. And the kind of that kind of apparition of Nicole is now like a shadow. It's like a dark shadow version of her. And if that shadow comes into contact with you at any point during that sequence, you just instantly die.
You do indeed.
Your mind is consumed by the marker, and that's it. Isaac's dead, clinically dead. So yeah, you're trying to fight off this shadow being. You kind of deal enough damage to her, and then she kind of like spirits away, and then you see the marker in the distance that you've got to just shoot, just throw as much gunfire at it as possible to destroy it in your mind.
Yeah,
and then it destroys it in real life.
Sort of symbolic that Isaac is basically deleting, getting rid of all of his memories of the marker, freeing the grip that the marker has on his head, on his mind. And obviously destroying the marker in the process.
Yeah, because what it is he's what we're actually seeing here is Isaac taking control of the frequency and turning it inward on the marker to destroy itself. So should you obviously succeed in doing so, Isaac is then able to let Nicole go, if that makes sense. So now that he's accepted his grief, he's dealt with it, and now he's destroyed that evil version of her, he finally has that kind of that closure and that separation from it, and he can continue to live on. Not that there's much chance of that with the space station exploding around him.
We obviously see Isaac kind of slumped to the ground, and he sort of accepts it, doesn't he? He sort of accepts his fate that he's probably going to die here. But at least if he does die, he's moved on. He's accepted, Nicole's loss from the first game. He's dealt with that grief and he's processed it. So he's very much happy, I think, at this point, just to be like, well, we did it. This is it now. There's no way out of this situation.
Yep. And then we get a little bit of an Ellie Ex Machina. And
we do.
She comes back with the gunship to save
Isaac. Save the day with the gunship. So
It's great, right? They make their triumphant escape after all the ordeal that they've been through on the Titan station. And one of my favorite bits about this ending sequence is you get it, and it's shot for shot the ending of the first game,
mm-hmm.
where he sits down in the seat of the ship, and he takes his helmet off and he breathes a big sigh of relief. And then he has that bit where he looks over to the side, just as he did in the first one when the ghost of Nicole jumps out. And Ellie's just sat there, and she looks over at him and she goes, "What?" And then it just cuts.
It's very cleverly done, because obviously it is pretty much cut for cut the exact same as the very first ending, like Zach said, which is fantastic. It's so good to see that kind of little reference, little cheeky reference, because, you know, if you've experienced the end of the first game, you're there like, oh, here we go. Oh, what's going to happen? Something's going to happen. He's going to see Nicole again. Who knows, right? But nothing happens, luckily. They escape, and it's all kind of somewhat happy days for once.
So it's all rounded off, and unlike the first one, you get that closure. So I think at this point in the series, if they wanted to have called it quits there,
they could have done that. But do you forget, my man, about the audio transmission?
Well, there is the audio transmission.
The audio transmission. They do a little Marvel Cinematic Universe styly. And after the credits, they drop an audio transmission, which is heard between two people. Someone who's both unknown, but one of them is known as the Overseer. You also do hear about this character from the game as well. There's a lot of text logs that you can find, which reference the Overseer as well. And the subordinate basically says that, oh, the Titan Station, you know, where Isaac's been, also known as Marcus Height 12, which is really interesting, has been destroyed. And the Overseer simply replies that the other sites will have to pick up the pieces.
Yeah, so we just felt like, you know, maybe we got this little bit of closure, you know, and we could wrap things up nicely for Isaac. And man, there's bigger. The game is only just started.
The game is afoot, my man.
It is afoot, absolutely.
The game is afoot. You know, this confirms a lot of things, right? It confirms that obviously the Unitologists aren't finished with Isaac. They're not finished with their plans for the markers either. And he also confirms, you know, that this was Marker Site 12. So there's more. And not only that, there's more marker sites that are still active as well.
Yeah. There's at least 11 other marker sites that we don't know of at this point, right? So
excluding, obviously, the original one as well, for one from the very first game.
Yeah, absolutely. So, we're at a point now where, kind of the main campaign has come to a close. Overall, I was very, very, very pleased and impressed with this installment of the Dead Space series.
It's fantastic, yeah. It has a real emphasis on what made the first Dead Space really good. It only, I think, improves in terms of quality of life issues. A lot of quality of life issues from the first game are resolved in this game. And it allows itself to be a little bit more action-y, but it definitely still hits home with the horror and the scares in the game.
Yeah. There is plenty of atmosphere there to be experienced. So, you know, it kind of taps into everything that it needed to be, and it ups the stakes. It ups the ante for what the first one was. You know, I would liken it a little bit to, like, you know how, like, the first Terminator film is great, and then they get to Terminator 2, and they just everything is like turned up to 11.
Yeah, right? Pretty much.
It's kind of like that, I would say.
In a way. That is very much a good way to describe Dead Space 2, the base game of Dead Space 2.
Yes, yeah. But we're not done there, ladies and gentlemen.
Whoa, so more content.
Dead Space 2 actually also had an expansion campaign called Dead Space 2 Severed. Now, this was very interesting, actually, because as we mentioned earlier, there were signs of battle throughout the station that you kind of notice as you play as Isaac. And Isaac isn't the only kind of protagonist here that's fighting their way through the station. We also have another character called Gabe Weller, who is the main character of the expansion campaign. And I actually didn't realize this until I've just recently replayed it, but Gabe Weller is actually one of the characters, one of the survivors from the Extraction, from Dead Space Extraction,
obviously. Rewind to the last episode if you forgot. Dead Space Extraction was the very strange rail shooter game that came out for before the first Dead Space, basically, which was for the Nintendo Wii and the PS3. And it was the motion-controlled one. Crazy, weird, on-the-rails shooter that is literally nothing like any of the other Dead Space games or spin-offs.
Yeah, so actually having a continuation for one of the characters, we've already kind of seen it, but that character died very quickly.
Yes.
So
this guy did not get his own DLC, sadly.
yeah, at least we get a little bit of time with Gabe, which is quite nice. And also his now wife, Lexine, who was also one of the other characters in Extraction as well, makes a return. She's actually one of the nurses in the hospital where Isaac is being retained.
Hey.
So and Gabe himself, he's actually one of the security, he's a member of the security force aboard the Titan station. So they've both kind of this life after the Ishimura for them, after being crew members on the Ishimura, surviving the Necromorph outbreak and escaping. They've decided to settle in Titan only to find out that another outbreak has followed them.
Ironically, so, also ends up in the same place where another outbreak happens. Like, it's just can't make that shit up, right?
These people are very unlucky.
Very unlucky. Right? They should find new new estate agents.
So yeah. So our game kind of picks up, or our expansion picks up. Gabe Weller's in he's on a patrol in the Titan mines. So already quite interesting, where Gabe is starting almost where Isaac finishes. And over the course of the campaign, he makes his way back to the hospital where Isaac started. So they almost have kind of reverse journeys, if you will. Mm.
Almost like a Outlast, Whistleblower type thing, right?
Yes, yeah. I was about to make that comparison. Mm, yeah.
They run concurrently, basically, alongside each other.
Yeah, so the signs of battle between the two characters are evident in each other's story, which I think is really good. They keep the continuity very, very the attention to detail to the continuity is of a very high standard here. So certain rooms where, like, I don't know, maybe a window would have been shot out and decompressed and all of the panels would have been ripped off the wall. When you go there later, as the other character, you can see the wear and tear of the battles that have taken place there. So they've done it very, very well there. So Gabe, being in the mines, seeing the Necromorph outbreak in its kind of inception, like you said, at Ground Zero, he makes a call to his wife, and he tells her just to get to the shuttle, get out of here. I'll meet you there, and we got to get as far away because it's happening all over again. So she's trying to hide in the hospital and trying to get away from the Necromorphs and everything else that's happening as she goes about. Now Gabe has to fight his way through the mines to get back to the habitation center, like we said, essentially doing a reverse journey of Isaac.
Basically going backwards,
there's all kinds of like bad shit going on in these mines, as we've already seen playing the main campaign. So Gabe is, as we've said, on patrol. He's able to warn his wife, and he's fighting his way through. He receives a transmission from Director Tideman ordering all surviving security teams to scrub the facility and eliminate all key subjects, meaning, you know, anybody that's a witness, eliminate them, take them out. So this isn't good.
Annihilate them.
And Gabe doesn't really want to do that because he's a good guy. He's a good guy, Gabe. So he arrives at the Titan Mines exit after a bit of a slog to get through the Necromorphs. And during his fight, he's in touch with a guy called Victor Bartlett, who's like his superior officer.
His leader, right?
And he's like, get to the exit of the mines, I'll pick you up in the gunship, and then we'll go and get your wife. And still, we're following suit with the theme of betrayal here, ladies and gents. Mr. Bartlett opens fire on him in the gunship as soon as he makes for the exit. And it's just horrendous, isn't it?
Like, Gabe's one is genuinely, it's a lot more sadder than, I mean, Isaac's story is obviously very sad, right? But by the time of the second game, obviously, and towards the end of the second game, Isaac kind of makes peace with what's happened to him and is a bit more understanding. And obviously, like I said, by the first game, very fucking jaded. Gabe's story, I think, is a lot sadder just because it's a lot shorter, obviously, as well. This man is just wrong place, wrong time.
Oh yeah, definitely. You know, and he's, you know, he's with his wife as well. You know, with Isaac, obviously, he's got the motivator of trying to find Nicole. Nicole's dead at this point, right? But his wife is still alive.
Yeah,
they still
have
a chance to survive and get out of there and live a happy life. And it just seems wherever they go, this fucking marker stuff just follows them around.
Exactly.
It's really tragic. It's really, they're like star-crossed lovers, aren't they? Mm-hmm. So Gabe's kind of like asking for Victor, like, why have you fired on me? Why are you giving me the shaft? And it's kind of, it leads to the revelation that Lexine is pregnant with Gabe's baby, and he refers to something called the Oracle Program, which is quite interesting, actually. And it was the fact that Lexine is immune to the marker signals. So it was a case of, like, the two of them were allowed to exist on the Titan station, almost as a bit of a pet project for the scientists.
They were sort of, after the events, obviously, of their own, you know, their first game, right? Extinction, they come back in. And they've obviously been through the ringer once before, right? So they kind of go over to Titan. And like you said, it's like, yeah, they're almost let in because of this weird phenomenon that Lexi is somehow immune, or has apparent immunity to the markers, you know? And obviously, at this point, right, they're due to have a child, aren't they, as well? So I guess their thinking there is the child also, you know, have this immunity too.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, there's some real, like, crazy extra Illuminati shit going on here, right? Where there's an extra layer to their story that it isn't even mentioned in Isaac's story at all, really.
No.
So the Church of Unitology have taken great interest in Gabe, and more specifically with Lexine, because of her immunity to the marker, right? That's I mean you could imagine them trying, almost revering her as like a prophet or like a Virgin Mary.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, this is what we're saying about like the mixture between like EarthGov and like the Unitology line starts like blur really on who's really on whose side, you know. Is EarthGov still looking after their own people? Are they secretly, you know, double agents with Unitology people? All these kind of things are going on.
I think we can definitely establish, once you know the full picture, that Unitologists and the EarthGov personnel are very much on opposite sides.
Yeah.
And
but there is obviously quite a lot of characters, right, which are almost like Unitology sleeper agents, you know, that you've come across for in the game.
But our kind of protagonists all the way through the series, they happen to be kind of collateral damage in this almost like this war. So there's a war of humanity going on between the faith and the system. So there's this real kind of butting heads of ideologies, which is kind of happening in the background of this game series as well, which I think it just furthers the interest and the depth of the plot.
It's a cool little lecture.
Yeah, it is really cool. And kind of now that Gabe knows that his wife is with child, like, he's got extra incentive to make sure that they get off the station. You know, he's got a child to fight for now. And now that he knows that there's at least one other interested party that are looking to eliminate or to take them away, like, he's gonna fight doubly hard to get there. So he manages to board a transport to get over to the psych ward, to the medical center where his wife is stationed, and obviously where Isaac has started. And like we said, this is where you start to see the wear and tear of Isaac's path of destruction. There's rooms just decimated, dead bodies everywhere. You know, he's gone to town, and Gabe kind of makes a comment there, like, because he knows Isaac is there, and he's like, Isaac isn't the only one fighting through this station right now. You know, so it's quite cool how he has awareness of Isaac, even though Isaac doesn't really have any awareness of him.
Yeah, there is like slight like a slight crossover. So like in one of the logs in there, Tideman refers to Isaac and Nolan by name, basically. And refers them as the last targets from a project known as Project Telomere? Something like that. So basically that suggests that by the time, you know, by the time of like chapter 6 in the main campaign, or chapter 7, whatever chapter it is, that they're in touch with each other, the events of this DLC have already concluded, basically. They've already gone through.
Yes, that's right, yeah. So Gabe actually manages to catch up with Lexine, but unfortunately his commanding officer was able to get to her first, and he takes her hostage. At which point two strange Unitologists pop up, and they hit his commanding officer with stasis, and they steal Lexine away, evidently, because if EarthGov is interested in her, they're definitely going to have interest, right? Because they're these two warring factions. So Gabe's like, oh shit, like, I've got to get my wife back, you know, they're gonna take her away. They managed to get to the hangar, or Gabe managed to get to the hangar where he sees that the Unitologists have been taken over by an infector, and they've been turned into Twitchers, which is actually the first time that you see them in this game.
Hey.
And it's one of the only times that the Twitcher enemy actually turns up in the whole game, and it's in the DLC. one of my favourite enemies from the first one, and they aren't in the base game of the second one. So glad that they brought them back as a little bit of a nod.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
So Gabe is able to kill these infected unitologists. He starts the launch sequence for the shuttle. However, as a bit of a last hurrah, Victor, his commanding officer, he has a grenade. He pops a grenade open and he detonates it. Commanding officer's killed. And sadly, Gabe is mortally wounded. His leg gets blown off and his rig and his helmet are compromised. So he can no longer survive the vacuum of space. And the shuttle bay has to be opened manually because it's the automatic controls are locked down. So sadly, he has to sacrifice himself in order to allow his wife and unborn child to escape.
How sad for Gabe.
Yeah. So the fact that it gets to that point, you know, and he gets all the way there and he sees her and he's about to escape and then it's just taken away. Right,
you do get a bit of epilogue, don't you, where it reveals that Gabe's remains get collected by EarthGov for study, but his wife isn't, you know, whereabouts are completely unknown.
Yeah, so she manages to escape and she's like a wanted fugitive. So the EarthGov and the Unitologists are no doubt both looking out for her to take her because they're going to want that research.
Well, that's the interesting thing, right? It's like how you say about the two warring factions, and this is why I say like you should kind of immerse yourself in the extra media that exists for Dead Space, because a lot of these extra media things, they explain quite a lot about kind of that background, and they flesh it out like a lot more. So once again, there was another graphic novel which came out called Salvage. Really cool artwork on that one. I never read it all, but I kind of got the gist from watching videos and stuff like that. And that's quite an interesting one, because that sort of low-key explains who those strange men are, the two strange men.
Yes.
Not directly. It doesn't tell them directly, but it shows someone who looks very similar to the strange men. And in that comic, they're actually known as oracles. They're called oracles.
Yeah.
And you kind of put two and two together that oracles are a strange, kind of almost secret agent for EarthGov, and they're sort of like MI5 to the max, basically, but their primary reason they exist is to deal with marker-related issues. But it doesn't really explain what it takes to become one, so a lot of people have a theory that every oracle also has that immunity to the marker as well, which is why EarthGov are doubling down to try and get Gabe's wife.
Yeah, they're quite interesting as well, because they speak kind of devoid of emotion. They're very kind of like, they're almost like, because initially when you first see them, you think, are they like androids? You know, are they robots? Or they're just very kind of matter of fact and devoid of emotion. So you have to wonder like what kind of rigorous kind of training and kind of indoctrination do they have to go through in order to become those oracles.
It's a very interesting side bit that's really only touched on in that side DLC and in the Salvage graphic novel. It's not spoke about anywhere else in there, which is kind of interesting. But I think that's what it is. There's some kind of agent, some kind of secret agent, top tier, top brass for the EarthGov, basically, who and their job is to deal with marker-related incidents somehow. And either they're immune to the marker themselves or some other reason.
Yeah. So it's interesting as well, because to my memory as well, I don't really remember any of this being kind of touched on again.
Not really, no. It literally isn't at all.
It's a bit of a shame, because it's a very interesting little side hustle that they've got as a part of the story, and it kind of like any kind of involvement with that Oracle program and so on and so forth, it's kind of forgotten by the third one, isn't it?
It is really, yeah. It's a big that comic as well. It's quite one about the Oracles is quite interesting, because they are the reason as well. Here's once again that crazy relation to the main plot of the game. Somehow, all these different media, it still remains coherent. It was the Oracles. It said. That are the ones that got hold of the Ishimura in the first place and brought the Ishimura back. That was their job.
Yeah, so there's some really deep ties, and it's just a shame they decided not to pursue that any further.
It's very weird.
Yeah, because they had some some really good potential there to pursue a really interesting
subplot. It was so cool. I don't know why they kind of went off the rails, but like that's going to be definitely I think a talking point for our next episode when we speak about the last game in this series. Well, what was going to be the last game in the series, Dead Space 3, which has a very uncertain and murky kind of outlook, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Paints a rather grim picture.
It was the one that kind of killed the franchise, so to speak. But you could already start to see the signs of the wear and tear between the relationship of Visceral Games and EA as a larger company.
Yeah, there was a lot of hit and misses, right? Especially with obviously the sales of Dead Space 2 not doing as well as it should be. I think them not wanting to kind of commit to doubling down on kind of the stuff as well, because when you obviously, I think I'm going to counterpoint to what I was saying about it having all these cool other forms of media, which is really cool. But obviously, like sometimes, right, there's so much out there, you're almost, you kind of run the risk, don't you, of kind of catching yourself out with your own kind of lore. And your own kind of world building, and you've got so many little threads and things to piece together, you're like, okay, so like this next game is going to be about this, right? And then it's not at all, you know, what you expect it to be about in the slightest, right? Like we said about the Oracle thing, completely kind of gets rid of that. Don't talk about it anymore. It's like, all right then.
You know, and that's the thing as well. And again, like I know we've said that we'll kind of discuss that a little bit more in the next episode. But it's like with Dead Space 3, I don't think it's a bad game. It's just not a good Dead Space game.
No, not at all. Especially compared to 1 or 2, you know.
Exactly. Like the first two, I think, are the definitive Dead Space experience. Outside of that, you know, you step into the realms of other things where, maybe you're not really there for the Dead Space experience, but it's still fun to play. We'll go into more detail with that in the next one.
It's going to be interesting.
I don't suppose you've got any last thoughts or last things that you want to cover off about Dead Space 2 before we wrap things up?
Dead Space 2, play it. Good.
It's good.
It's good. It's good. Watch the anime films, read the comics. I think if you're going to do anything, the anime films, the comics, I think are the best and the most easily accessible ones to get into. The Martyr one is good, but it's actually like a book, like a novel, proper novel. Kind of interesting if you want even more kind of background. But I think the anime films are a great gateway into playing the games, especially the very first one, because you can watch that before playing any of the games, which is really good. So you can watch that as your very first kind of intro into it. And obviously, as you said last time, the remake will be out by the time this episode goes live. And they've already stated in the remake one that they are tying together more of that external media actually into the game, which would be really good. So they're going to talk about Extraction and they're going to talk about Extinction in the first game now, which is really exciting.
And you know what, with that kind of attitude, as we've just said, it's a shame that they didn't pull on certain threads. Maybe this is their opportunity.
Well, this is what I think. Now they're going back. Yeah. I think they're going to they're not necessarily going to change the storyline completely, but I think they're going to make everything flow a bit nicer. And they're going to draw all this extra universe stuff in and make it coherent, obviously, because them bringing more things in like the anime and then bringing Extraction in as well, that obviously brings Gabe's character more on point as well. So if they do a remake of the second game, we'll obviously see his DLC remade. And who knows, maybe even longer, because it's only 2 chapters long, isn't it, originally?
It's a very short DLC, but it is very good.
It is very good,
And the exposition dump for the background information is fantastic in that.
And like I said, if you've read the comic, you know, that spin-off comic, right, that's crazy, because that's a complete link to something in that comic, right? So I think bringing it all together in one place is going to be really good, because then you won't have to go elsewhere. You can just play the remake of the first game, and you can get all this knowledge through that, which is awesome.
Yeah, and let's just hope that today's gaming market is better equipped and more receptive of this series.
Yeah, well, I mean, the series already had its heyday, right? And it's kind of and it's the tippy top, because it was the tippy top of survival horror for such a long time, right? Dead Space was the pinnacle almost for a lot of survival horror games.
They're going to get people obviously on a nostalgia basis for sure, but I also really really hope that this spurs on a bunch of new fans to join the series.
100%, And it, like I said, it'd be interesting seeing what their next moves are from there as well, you know. Are they going to do a second game? Probably. Are they going to... What happens after the second game? Are they going to completely redo the third game? I could see that, to be honest. I could see the third game being completely redone, personally.
Yeah.
And almost like, you know, when they get like your remakes of films and they kind of make a whole new kind of thing for it, I could see that with the third game. I could see the third game being completely remade. from the ground up.
And you know, like that's absolutely fine. Like they could do that. Mm. I'd actually, you know, and again, like again, I don't really hate Dead Space 3. I don't. And I think all they got to do is just tie a few more bits and pieces in. That's all they got to do. Mm-hmm. Just make a few more references. Just try and focus on keeping it a bit more Dead Space rather than it being a co-op action shooter.
Yeah, exactly.
First and a Dead Space game second.
Yeah, you
know, that's the important part, that we get the atmosphere and the
we call the arbitrary multiplayer modes and we make a coherent campaign that's experienced single player. You know, and whether you change up characters throughout our campaign, something like that, who knows, right? I'm not saying it has to be like Devil May Cry 2 styly, you know, where you can play the entire campaign as two different characters, right? You could quite easily have the one campaign and switch between the characters during the campaign.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
many games employ that same tactic and it works totally fine for them.
It does, yeah. There's plenty of ways that you can do it. And I think the only way we're going to know if that's even ever going to happen is to see how the remake is.
I mean, I'm under no
both financially and critically.
I'm under no doubt that you know it's going to go well because there's a lot of hype being drawn up for it again, right? We're entering the renaissance for horror games, as it were. And that's only growing, obviously, this year, like we said, with Silent Hill 2 remake, Resident Evil 4 remake, and now Dead Space. It's obviously, you know, and all those other games we spoke about a little while ago as well, cool horror games that are coming out. So, like, it is... We're on there, right? We're in the motions. Also, some people are saying like, oh, some people are actually, this is fresh information before we end. Some people are already playing with retail copies of the game, discs.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, some discs have gone out early because it releases Friday in the UK. So people are already playing. And apparently they're saying, some guy's like, I am blown away by this remake, 2.5 hours in, absolutely loving it.
Oh, I think that was a thing as well I wanted to mention as well. Another little fun fact. I'm pretty sure Dead Space 2 released in Europe on the same day that the
yes, it did.
Remake is released.
27th of January. Oh, cool. Is that?
January.
Look at that.
Yeah, so,
very interesting.
They're actually releasing it on the anniversary of Dead Space 2, which I think is quite cool.
Everyone here is saying, is it good? I'm going to look to pre-order, but I don't know. This guy is like, he's saying it's phenomenal. Remade enough to make it feel like a new game.
Well, I'm very excited.
It's interesting. Interesting, right? So this is fresh information. Yes, some dude is like in his Walmart in America, bro. They've already got on the shelf. Missed the day by 2 days there, but nice job anyway. Yeah, literally Walmart in America is selling Dead Space right now, apparently. There's loads of posts on the Dead Space Reddit of people holding copies of the fucking game. They're selling it early, bro.
Oh, scalpers.
Oh my god, they're selling, yeah. They got it, bro. Unbelievable. And apparently you can play it early. Only the digital copy is locked at the moment, obviously behind the release schedule, but if you have the disc version you can play it. Obviously though, word of warning, if you do be playing those games early, one, don't be spoiling it for people. Obviously that's quite funny, we're talking about this, but you know, spoiler warnings have already become out for this, so don't be spoiling it,
don't spoil it unless you've got a podcast.
Unless you've got a podcast. And yeah, secondly, just don't be a dick about it either, you know. Enjoy it. For some people, this is going to be their first ever foray into the game. And it is a fantastic like, horror game, you know. So if you love survival horror, is one to check out, you know. And for a long time the entry to play it has been, you know, rather restricted because of the, you know, the game being old and the PC port I still think not being that great, my opinion.
Yes, but if you do have the ability to go back and play the old ones, because if there are going to be any remakes, they're not going to be out for a while, definitely get hold of them. They're still selling them on Steam and stuff like that.
100%. Yeah.
You can still get hold of it.
If 2 is getting remade, we don't know if it's been made in tangent with this or not. So we don't understand. We don't know what's going on there. We don't know when it's going to come out, if it ever's going to come out. And obviously 3 is uncertain. Because like I said, I think if 3 does come out again, it won't be in the same form you know it now. It'll be different.
They'll rework it.
They will rework 100%. 2 won't have anything done to it. It doesn't need it, other than tying in the plot points that they've done with basically 1. One's remake.
Oh, mate, bring back the multiplayer. Like,
I don't think the multiplayer's going to ever come back. if they looked at it and they were like, what we need to do is just fucking make the same mistakes twice, then I don't think people are going to gel with that very well, you know.
What we need is one of those giant battle royale modes in it.
Although I was saying that, Isaac is in Fortnite now. Isaac Clark
is
in Fortnite.
I know he is. Yeah, I know.
You can play as our wonderful engineer in Fortnite. So if you play Fortnite, I've said Fortnite about 5 times now.
They've got They've got more franchise ties than Lego at this point.
Well, that's because it's not really just a game anymore. I remember reading an interview with Epic's like creative director behind it, and he basically explained it as it's not really a game anymore. It's become a media platform, basically.
Yeah.
It is its own media platform now, which is kind of wild. But that is literally how Fortnite is, you know, developed into it. It has become its own media platform. There's so much stuff in the game. It's not its own game anymore, really. It's like everything in amongst it, you know. Very weird.
Yeah.
Maybe one day we'll do a discussion of the ins and outs of Fortnite as a game.
Well, no rush.
No rush, obviously. Yeah, I do find its development very interesting.
Oh yeah, yeah, definitely. From a game design level,
yeah, it's a very interesting, very very interesting thing that what they've done with Fortnite.
Yeah, well, on that note then, I think we should wrap things up.
Thank you ever so much, everyone, for listening to us ramble once again about a game we love so dearly. Next time, we're going to come at you with Dead Space 3, and that one's going to get really hairy.
Yeah, we've got an interesting ride ahead of us, so I'm looking forward to talking about that one for sure. Hopefully, we can play it cooperatively before
Fingers crossed, before
we talk about it as well.
Obviously, so, with the new one coming out, though, we'll have to find some time.
Yeah, all right, fair enough. Yeah. We'll see you later, everybody. Take care.
See you later, guys.
Bye.